This is Harry Murray at Murray's Fly Shop in Edinburgh, Virginia. This is our question and answer podcast that we do usually about once a month on questions that you've sent in to us and things that you've called that I would like to discuss that maybe can help you a little bit. Some of this applies to what we're doing right now in the middle of the winter, and some of it are things we use throughout the season. The first thing is a relatively straightforward thing, but I find it very, very important. That is simply carrying a couple of bottles of water with you when you're hiking around these streams, especially up in the mountain or even on the river when you really wouldn't want to drink the water. A friend of mine got into serious trouble. Actually, he was out in the Tetons. Had an ice chest back in the car. Walked way up in one of the lower meadows in the Tetons. The boy was a physician by all chances. About 2 or 3 miles up in there, he started feeling very lousy. Finally dawned on him he hadn't drunk any water in many, many hours. And he hightailed it back down to the car, picked the ice chest up, and started drinking right out of the ice chest. So that's a simple thing to do. If I'm going to be very far back in the bush, I carry my vest rather than a pouch because I can stick a couple water bottles in the back of my vest and that'll get me by. Now, I want to talk a minute about this pop strike. I've been talking about it off and on for a long time, and some of you have called and asked about it. A pop strike is a strike that I use when I'm fishing in a stream. Now, this would probably be a mountain stream such as Soda Butte out in the park in the middle of the summer when you're catching cutthroat every second or third cast. Could be down in the Smokies over on Abrams Creek when you're catching rainbows right and left. And, you know, the challenge, obviously, is to drift your fly over that trout, get him up, set the hook, and you have fooled him. I mean, you've done 99.9%. Fighting that guy right down to where he's ready to turn belly up, I don't care what size he is, really doesn't prove a whole lot that you're a hero. To me, a pop strike is what I do. I put my fly out on the water, whether I see the trout rising or whether I'm covering the water. I'm putting my dry fly out on that pool. It's drifting down. He comes up and takes my dry fly. I set the hook. I know I have him. I have outsmarted him. That's 99% of it. Then instantly, I'm talking about 2 seconds, I release the tension on that line, and 3/4 of those fish will swim away as if they didn't even know they'd been hooked. It, for one thing, it keeps you from goofing up your fly that you have to dress it and get all going again. Plus, it doesn't stress that fish. But basically what it is, you're drifting your fly down through there. The trout comes up, takes it. You set the hook. You did it. So now you're a hero. So release that guy quickly and let him swim away and have a good time. Okay, winter time. Everybody's designing new flies. In fact, we're coming out with quite a few new flies this year. You know, we do a lot of testing through the summer on design. But it is quite possible that you could sit right there at your vise and design a fly for a particular type fishing you plan to do next summer that you just really weren't satisfied with the flies that you were using last year under those conditions. That's how I've come up with almost, well, like our Mad Tom, like our many of the flies that we're coming up with, the Hogsucker, that they're just a hot to trot smallmouth fly for us. That's how we've come up with a lot of these flies that we use. We test various designs and then work them out, and trial and error, we keep going till we improve it to where we think we've got the right thing, and away we go. And you can easily do that on your own. Let me talk about this one, because this is one of the most confused things we have in fly fishing. The tippet and the leader. When you buy a leader off the rack, whether it's a knotless leader or a knotted leader, it is ready to go with the tippet on the end. Don't buy that leader, then walk over and buy a spool of tippet and add tippet to an existing leader. you'll finally have that thing reaching out so far that it will not turn the fly over properly. I personally use all compound knotted tapered leaders. These are designs I worked out many years ago. Fortunately, I have some fellows that tie these for me now, because sitting there building the leaders is just about exciting as watching the Safeway truck unload. But anyway, we use all compound knotted tapered leaders. Now, when we sell that, it's ready to go. Now, as you change flies on the stream, you need to replace that tip section, only the tip section. Cut that tip head off behind the last knot, and then put your 2 to 3 foot tip section back on top of that. But don't add tip head to tip head to tip head. It will not turn over properly, and you'll end up saying all kind of bad words. All right, what's next on the list? Okay, hook size. Now, I'm in the process of doing a whole lot of fly tying classes here at the store. In fact, we're doing some advanced classes this year on flies I've designed. Hook size, basically, we refer to the bite of the hook. That's the distance between the point of the hook and the shaft. That is called the bite of the hook, or the gap of the hook, or the gape of the hook. That is a standard measurement. Now, we can get 2X long, 3X long, 4X long, but that bite remains the same. So you could have a size 6, we'll say Mustad 94840. A size 6 on a 94840, which is a standard size, and then you could also have a 6 on a Mustad 9672, which is 2 to 3X long. But the bite of that hook is the same. It's all the same measurement. We're putting out some cards now to try to help explain this to people that call in with questions and also in our classes, because the bite of the hook is really what gauges the size. All right. Oh, yeah, wintertime fishing. Everything get out here, our rods freeze up, our lines freeze up, our spools even freeze up. The best way to get around that is to prevent so much water from accumulating on the rod. What I do with my rods this time of the year here that I'm going to fish with, and also when I'm fishing out in the Rockies at the time of the year, I would expect ice to form on them. See, the ice is actually not forming on the rod per se. The ice is accumulating on the guides and on the rod because there's a deposit of water there. All right, so if you can eliminate the collection of water in the guides and on the rod, you're going to get less freeze up. So what I do, I dress my rods real thoroughly. I wash them with a toothbrush and Ivory soap, get all the grit, grime, and all that stuff off of them, especially around the guides, get all that junk off there. Then I rinse them off real good, dry them off. I go back with something like, I especially like Scientific Angler's line dressing. I put some Scientific Angler's line dressing on a paper towel, and I wax my rod like gangbusters, and then I go back and try to rub all that off. See, what that does, it prevents the water from adhering to the rod, so I get less freeze up. So that'll give me a couple extra hours almost always on the stream. Now, looks at coming down the list. It's quite possible, if you're wading out in a stream, that you might, say your clippers might break and drop in the creek. Well, I carry a couple extra little things in my pouch, or vest, whichever. I really keep a minimum of everything in my pouch and in my vest. You'd be shocked if you saw what I didn't carry. But I do carry an extra pair of clippers. They just lay in the bottom of my pouch. So if I drop my clippers in the river, I've got an extra one. I do carry one extra compound knotted tapered leader, so if anything goes really crazy and I screw up a leader, I've got an extra one in there to replace it with. Fly box. I basically fish out of one box. My son would be in shock if he heard me say this, because he carries half the store we got. But I carry basically fish out of one box, both here and in the Rockies. However, at one time on a Spring Creek out in Montana, I lost my box. Nobody ever gave it back to me either. To compensate for that, I do carry a very small, like one of these little Freebie Murray boxes, I do carry a small box with about a dozen to 15 flies in there that if I lose my main box, I'm not going to be grounded. So that's what I do in my box to keep my weight down. Okay, flip cast. When I'm teaching fly casting here on the lawn, some of you have asked me about this. My term for a flip cast is a cast in which I am making extremely accurate presentation on, we'll say, a small trout stream. A trout stream in which I'm going to be casting less than 20 feet. All right, let's set it up. I'm coming into this mountain trout stream. I see a trout rising 15 feet away. All right, now, that close in, there's a good chance I'm going to spook that guy if I start waving back and forth across the top of him like the books say we're supposed to do. Nor do I want to use a bow and arrow cast. It's going to send that thing out there like a .22 rifle. A flip cast to me, remember, my fish is out there 15 feet in front of me. Flip cast to me is I'm using a rod with a very delicate tip. This could be the Murray Mountain Trout rod, could be one of these new G rods. But I'm holding the rod in my hand. I've got the fly in the other hand. I've got, between the rod tip and that fly, I've got probably, 10 feet of line drooping down through there. Maybe 12 or 14 feet of line and leader drooping down through there. So I'm sneaking down, bending over, moving into that trout. Remember, I see him out there rising. I'm still holding tight to the fly in my left hand. I'm making that presentation cast with my right hand. That rod turns over. As the fly line turns over in the air, I simply open my left fingers. Zap! It rolls right out to him. And if you want to talk about teacup accuracy, you've got it. I teach that up here. If I've got guys in my class say, well, I really want to nail down this mountain trout stuff, I teach him that stuff, and he says, I can't believe how accurate that is. So that's my flip cast. I kind of hit this one here a second ago. Don't false cast over any fish you see feeding out there on the pool. I don't care if it's a big river out west or whether it's a mountain brook trout stream down in the Smokies. When you're standing there waving that rod back and forth over that trout with that rod line sailing back and forth, there's a good chance you're going to spook him. If you think you need to make a measuring cast, do it well to the side of the pool, then turn and make your presentation cast to him. But don't false cast over that. You're just asking for trouble. The Murray's Dry Fly Patch. Somebody said, what is it? Well, it's a felted patch that I treat chemically. Haven't been a pharmacist. I play with all these games, you know, hydrophobic, hydrophilic, and all that. I get a felt patch, and then I treat it chemically so it will absorb water. All right. When you're fishing a dry fly, and whether you've caught a fish with it or whether you miscue and it fell in fast water and it starts sinking, don't just bring that thing back and put dry fly floating on it. I don't care what type you're using, you're compounding the problem. You already got a fly full of water. You come back here and start adding junk to it, either the powder or the liquid, you just made it a whole lot worse. What I do, I bring that fly back, I blot it dry on my dry A fly patch. Just blot it, just like the old-time ink blotter. I blot all that dry, then I dress it, and away I go. Now, that fly is going to float properly. Let's see, what other questions? Well, that pretty well gets me down to the end of some of that. Well, here's one I do want to hit on, because I really had a problem on this in one of my classes. One of the guys was in the class way back in the boondocks. He locked his key in the car. We had to call a lady that came 55 miles away and charged him $100 to get in his car. Use a hide-a key under your bumper or wherever you want to put it under your car. So when you get back to the car, if you've locked the keys in the car, as this boy did, you can get in. Now, I know some of these new electronic things go beep, 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 and you can't really do it. A friend of mine solves that problem by getting his hide key and wrapping it aluminum foil, and then he sticks it under there, and that doesn't screw up all the beep, beep, beeping. So think about a Heide Key. Well, that'll give you some things to look at, and I'll be back this time next month. If you have any questions, just give me a call, and I'll be glad to help you. Harry Murray and Murray's Fly Shop in Edinburgh, Virginia. Just call me if you have any questions at 540-984-4212. Oh, and check our website now. I'm doing a school every Saturday and here on something. Some of them are fly tying, some of them are casting, some of them are rigging. Some of them, I'm doing one week after next on 17 different trout streams in the Shenandoah National Park. So if any of these have any appeal to you, they only cost you $20, but just look on our website and see what's coming up, and we'll be glad to help you. Thank you very much. Call us if we can help. 540-984-4212. Thank you.